What's up, everyone? It's Michael Scotto, HoopsHype.com's NBA writer and host of the HoopsHype podcast. On today's episode, I'm joined by a Hall of Famer, a seven-time All-Star, and someone who's in my personal NBA top 75, but we'll get to that in a little bit. It's Tracy McGrady. T-Mac, I appreciate you hopping on the line with us today. You've certainly been doing a lot post-playing career, and one of the things I want to talk to you about was your newest venture, the Ones Basketball League. And I was curious for you, what's your vision for the league going forward now that you formed it?
Mike, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be on your platform, brother. I think for me, man, there's a lot of things that came to mind when formulating OBL. And that's what, you know, I have an AAU program, and I have two sons of my own that plays in my program. But just being around this new generation and learning from them, these guys don't watch NBA games. They don't watch the collegiate game. Their attention span, they just don't have the attention span to watch 3 hours of basketball. You know, it's short form content for them. That's why they love TikTok so much. And, you know, all these short videos, this is the world that they grew up in. And my kids are always talking about asking me questions, who will win in a game of one-on-one between me and KD and, you know, just some of their favorite players in the NBA, and going back to like Kobe and Michael Jordan, I always get asked that question. And they always ask, posing those type of scenarios and questions on social media as well. And I just felt like you have tennis, you have UFC where, you know, it's me versus you. Why not basketball, bro? Why not create and find out who is the biggest and baddest one-on-one player in the game of basketball? Like, we identify LeBron James, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant. Like, we identify these guys as goats of the game. But when it comes to one-on-one basketball, me versus the opponent, you know, across from me, we don't know who that is. And I want to find that individual, those people. I want to find them. I want to create stars, right? I want to create a platform for the untapped talent that is out here that, you know, didn't really get the opportunity. Everybody can't play in the NBA. Some of these guys don't get calls to go and play across seas. So why not create a platform for these guys? And I don't know if you know, Mike, there's a lot of underground one-on-one leagues here in the States that we don't hear about. So I want to give these guys a platform and create stars. And I have the opportunity and the resources to be able to do that.
How did you go about finding these guys, these players, and learning about their stories? And if there's anyone in particular, players you're keeping an eye on in the OBL?
So in OBL, I mean, our job is to go out to these leagues and find, you know, that type of talent, what we're looking for our league, that still can play at an elite level. And I think be appreciated by the consumers that will be watching our game. I feel we can create something that is on the level of a UFC. When you look at UFC and what they did for guys that we didn't know before hitting their platform, I want to become the UFC of basketball. And, you know, with the talent that I've seen, you know, on some of these, in some of these parks, I know we can create that. It's just a matter of identifying them, having guys with great stories, because we want to do some storytelling, and that's a huge part of that, and create and make stars.
You know, you in one of the press releases I saw, you guys are going to have women able to compete possibly as soon as 2023. I was curious if you had any other noteworthy updates that you wanted to share on OBL and maybe something else fans of yours as well as, you know, one-on-one basketball could look out for coming up, whether it's across cities or anything like that.
Yeah. So what the first season consists of is us going to seven cities, and in each of those cities, we're inviting 32 participants, right? So we have 32 players each city. The number one player out of that city is going to win $10,000. The top three from each city will get the invite for OBL championships that will take place in Las Vegas for the ultimate prize, which will be $250,000. We want to see who's going to be the king of the court, the ruler of the court, if you will. And that is the first season of OBA. And like you stated earlier, we're going to start a women's OBL as well. I mean, it's only right that we get the women's involved because I watched women's college basketball in the NBA as well. And these girls got game. And there's a lot of, you know, women I see that has the skills to play one-on-one in our league. So we definitely want to target that. But the ultimate goal for OBL is to be global. That is the ultimate goal, to be global, have a global league to where we can identify the best one-on-one players across the globe, whether that's in Africa, whether that's in Asia, whether that's in the Middle East. We want to find the best one-on-one players and then create within that OBL Olympics.
And folks, you can check out more on the OBL on oblhoops.com and obviously TMAC's Twitter as well at TMAC_213 for more information on that as well. The OBL question I had for you was, how do you try to separate this league from maybe something like we've seen other leagues try to form like a big three? What makes you think that this could be, I mean, obviously it's different in a one-on-one, but what can take it to a different level in your opinion?
Well, I think in my opinion is what I just stated. We want to take OBL global, right? OBL, we want to take it global. We want to form a league that identifies the best one-on-one player in each country and then create competition to where we actually competing against other countries. What separates us is it's one-on-one basketball that it hasn't been done on this type of platform and structure of what we're creating. And then the storytelling, man, we're going to do an amazing job of, you know, doing some storytellings and creating stars within OBL.
Well, I look forward to that. And obviously, as I mentioned, folks, you can check out oblhoops.com for more information on that. They have a sign up where you can get email updates as well. I encourage you to do that. T, I also wanted to get some of your thoughts on your NBA career a little bit. And obviously, you know, you being an elite one-on-one guy at that, a two-time scoring champion, seven-time All-Star. I mentioned in the Open, you were my personal NBA top 75. We actually voted on that on Hoopsite. You certainly cracked mine. I was just curious for you, when that list came out, what was going through your mind when that played out and the NBA voted on their top 75? How did you feel about the results?
I felt like I should have been on there. I mean, I'm not going to lie about that. Did it move me that I wasn't on there? I wasn't, you know, like ready to call media and bash the NBA for not putting, like, it didn't really move me that much. Yes, I felt like I should have been on there. But at the end of the day, you know, you said something when you were introducing me that means a lot more to me than being on the top 75, and that's being in the Hall of Fame.
Well, I mean, certainly that is obviously the highest honor in that regard. And, you know, you've got your own accolades with that. Your career in itself was certainly interesting. I mean, it could have took a million different turns. I think one thing that was always interesting was the story about how you could have went to the Bulls in a Scottie Pippen trade. And I always get a kick out of that. I mean, you're laughing, obviously. What did you ever wonder what would have happened if you went to the Bulls in that Scottie Pippen trade at all? And any thoughts on that?
Jerry Krause had an obsession with me. I mean, at 18 years old, and at 20 years old, he, like, when I became a free agent in 1999, 2000, he had an obsession, man. And Did I think about what would have happened if I would have became a Bull as a rookie in that trade? Yeah, I thought about it. Did I feel like they should have made that trade? Absolutely not. Because they were still winning championships. You bringing in a rookie, you taking away a top 50 player for a rookie who at that time, I wasn't ready to step in that role. I don't want to be stupid about this. So they made the right choice. MJ made that right call of, you know, really putting an axe to that and keeping that same core group together and went on and won another championship. But, you know, I had the opportunity in 2000 when I was a free agent, but, you know, like Toronto, like any other team that was recruiting me, they were recruiting against me going to play back home in Orlando. And that's just a tough challenge.
Were there any other times that you were almost traded that maybe people don't know about?
No. I mean, other than the Philly trade when I was with Toronto for Larry Hughes, but other than that, no.
You know, you touched briefly on being in Toronto. You ever wonder what would have happened if you stayed with Vince Carter before going to Orlando and teaming with Grant Hill?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure whatever I would have accomplished with staying with Vince, I could have accomplished with, you know, G Hill as well. I mean, you're talking about two dynamic players. We didn't know Grant was going to be dealing with his ankle injuries my whole career in Orlando. We just didn't know that. But, I mean, you're talking about T-Mac and Grant Hill. That would have been scary, right? But even with teaming up with Vince as well would have been scary. So it's a lot of what ifs to my career, man. And I hate, you know, really talking about it because I just know what would have happened if I would have teamed up with Grant Hill in Orlando, especially with what I became as a basketball player.
Yeah, to that point, I mean, a healthy you and a healthy Grant Hill, it's a totally different ball game. And obviously there was always that stuff about, you know, Tim Duncan possibly going there. And it's like, I just think back to like nowadays when they were trying to keep like DeAndre Jordan with the Clippers and they had the meeting and they were locking the door and you heard all those stories. Like was Tim Duncan ever really close to going to Orlando with you guys? And was there ever anything like that where like Pop and them really kind of had like some type of meeting or whatever to keep him? Because like, you know, everybody talks about like the big threes in the NBA now. Like if you, right, Grant Hill and Tim Duncan ever formed together, like, holy moly, man, that would have been a dynasty.
I know. You know, it's all hearsay. I don't have enough information. Only, you know, the reports that was put out there. I've never had a discussion with Timmy about that. Never had a discussion with Doc about, you know, that situation that is thrown out there. The rumor that is thrown out there is Timmy didn't sign with the Magic because he wanted, I think it was the spouses to travel on the plane to some of the away games, and Doc wasn't in agreement with that. And that was a deal breaker for Timmy. And so that's what I was told. Again, I don't have information from either of those guys, so I can't confirm if that's true or not. But if it was, I mean, Doc Rivers, come on, bro. What are you doing?
Oh, man, what could have been? I mean, look, right. you touched on like, you know, the injuries, what could have been for you. I mean, you had a very dominant 7-year stretch that included the 2-time scoring champ and being a 7-time All-Star straight. Like, what are your overall thoughts on your NBA career? Because, I mean, you were good enough to be a Hall of Famer. And obviously, you know, again, I think you were top 75. I think if anything, at worst, right, we could say you were on the bubble. Let's just say that, right? Like,
right.
And that's with the injuries you dealt with. Like, what are your thoughts on your career, what you were able to accomplish, and what could have been, in your opinion?
I mean, my honest opinion is I had a successful career. How anybody wants to picture that and label that, I don't care. To me, and when I look back from where I come from, what I was able to accomplish in my 15-year career, I had a great, great successful career, and one that you know I'm content with. I didn't win a championship. Hell, I didn't have a deep run in the playoffs. But that doesn't take away from what me individually preparing myself and doing everything I possibly could every single night to win for my team. And we came up short, you know? So I could look myself in the mirror when I go home and ask, did you do everything you possibly could in these playoffs to advance, to win, to help your team, you know, be successful? And I did that. And I'm content with that. So, you know, I had a great career, man. One that I am content with and love looking back on, you know, what I was able to accomplish. I love, you know, when the next generation come up and say I was an inspiration to them. That's what really matters. You know, you want to be inspiration to those coming after you. And if they appreciate it, if your peers appreciate it and gave you that respect, that's the validation.
Well, I always used to joke privately when you had injuries and stuff, I used to joke, well, that's because you were carrying Orlando on your back for a lot of years, you know, with the, the two-time scoring champ and stuff.
Honestly, a lot of people don't understand, man. In Orlando, those 4 years, it really took a toll on me because I was averaging, you know, 40-something minutes a night. And even in the playoffs, you know, playoffs, 48 minutes. I mean, games of 48 minutes, I'm averaging about 40, 43, 44 minutes. And those type of minutes in playoff games is like double a regular season game because the intensity and the physicality, the toll it takes on you. So those 4 years tore me up.
But what was it like with Yao Ming and Jeff Van Gundy with the Rockets? Because, I mean, Yao also kind of had some injuries there, and I thought Jeff was always an interesting kind of coach for you. What was it like with those two?
It was great. It was a different environment. It was a different, I guess for me, Jeff. I labeled Jeff as the best coach that I've played for because of the preparation. I was like, never been so prepared for games, the information that I receive going into games. Doc was great as well. Doc was a hell of a motivator, though. Like, Doc pregame speeches that have you want to run through the walls. But Jeff Van Gundy, the information that he gave to his players for each game and the accountability that was put on me and Yao, and in particular me, to inspire and do more for my team. I never had anybody put that type of responsibility on me like that. And I appreciated that because it helped me grow as a player, as a leader. Playing with Yao special, just to see somebody of his size and his skill set, to see that every day and see how hard he worked. Wow. I mean, I marveled at, you know, his work ethic and his skill set.
As you talked about, you know, with Yao, right? When I think of you talking about OBL hoops and taking it global, I think of the impact both, and I don't think people realize this because I think people would just assume it was Yao, but you were equally as popular in that market in China. And I think if you guys ever went there with OBL too, that would be an immense like growth for you guys with the league.
Come on, Mike. You know we got to go to China, bro. You know, Yao is the head of Chinese Basketball Association. Come on, man. You know that's what we got to go with this.
That's a little spoiler.
Totally right.
That's a little spoiler. I kind of figured, but, you know, you never want to count their chickens before they hatch. That'll be exciting to see. And obviously with, you know, OBL being a one-on-one atmosphere, correct me if I'm wrong, but was Kobe Bryant the guy that you thought was the best one-on-one player? Who was the best one-on-one player in your opinion that that you consider, in your opinion?
Well, I consider Kobe is definitely at the top of that list, but I mean, I could go a handful of guys, you know, that is great one-on-one players. You know, Baron Davis, a Katino Mobley, Lou Williams, I mean, Jamal Crawford, like these are one-on-one certified killers, right? Allen Iverson, like that's what these guys do. But yeah, definitely Kobe is at the top of that list though.
I always appreciated you two, like when you would sit down and talk about each other's game, and he praised you obviously being like kind of a taller version of him a little bit and a tougher guard. This is a bit of a tricky question, but at your peaks, you and Kobe, who would win a one-on-one game? Since we always joke about how, you know, you get these questions about other guys on Twitter, I felt like that would be a good one for you.
Yeah, I think it'd go back and forth. You know, I think it won't be a lopsided, you know, competition. I just think it'll go back and forth. He will win some, I will win some. I'll leave it at that.
Sounds good to me. Tracy, is there anything on any other further stuff on OBL hoops that you wanted to share for the listeners that they could look forward to coming up on the league?
Yeah, man. Just if you love basketball, and you know, you want to watch great competition, you want to watch, you know, some guys just going head to head to identify who is the greatest one-on-one player in the United States of America, OBL is that league. You know, definitely support it. It's going to be great content. Great character guys, and we're gonna load this thing up, man, and make it worth, you know, everybody's while to watch it. So tune in. OBL is coming to a city near you.
And folks, again, you can check that out on oblhoops.com. Tracy, last question I had for you, because I know you do have to run. You were always a guy that was supremely talented and gifted. Some people, I think, though, may have mislabeled you as not as hard a worker because of that. I wanted to just give you the platform to kind of speak on that, because sometimes that got floated out there during your career.
So Mike, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. From what you just said, the NBA is the best players in the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
The most talented guys in the world, right?
Absolutely.
So if I'm able to make 7 All-Stars, 7 All-NBA teams, 2 first teams, score 62 points in an NBA game, have one of the most efficient seasons in NBA history at 32, one of the youngest players to do it. How the hell you do that without working hard? how do you accomplish all that without working hard?
Well, that's why I framed the question the way I did.
So if I'm able to do that, and then you got some of these guys that work their ass off, and they don't accomplish that. So what does it say about them? Like these guys are too great to label me as not a hard worker in the things that I accomplished. Do you know Vince Carter, Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, all 3 of these guys are Hall of Famers. 2 of those guys are top 75, and they never made an all-NBA first team.
Ooh.
They don't work hard.
Folks, Tracy has the receipts, folks.
So they don't work hard?
Mm-hmm.
And I've made 2 of those teams? Come on, man. Like, let's cut the bullshit out.
Is there any other label that was put on you that you disagree with? But I mean, you know, since we're kind of on that topic, is there anything you disagreed with on your career? Maybe, I don't know, like the whole not winning a ring thing, anything that comes to your mind in particular?
Mike, I won, bro. And I'm still winning. I won. My dream, right? When I realized basketball is my sport, my dream was to make it to the NBA. I don't know about, you know, kids, middle school, elementary, middle school, wherever, whenever you start dreaming about playing in the NBA, I don't know if you dream about winning an NBA championship. I didn't dream that. I dreamed about making it to the NBA. And then when I got there, it's like, okay, I'm here. Now let's see how good I could become and how far I could take this. I won, bro. Like I did everything I possibly could to win a championship. I didn't have a championship team. So I did everything I possibly could individually and for my team to be successful. And that's just what it is.
I respect it. Tracy, I appreciate you joining us here on the Hoops High podcast. Was always a fan of you as a player, as an interviewer, I would say. Always a pleasure to talk to when I got to chat with you when you were in the league. And I actually still have the T-Mac 2s. I have them in the black and the blue. Still wear them to this day.
So my man.
Appreciate you, Mike. That is my favorite pair. Appreciate your time, brother. Want to thank Tracy for joining me. I want to thank everybody else for tuning in. If you want to hear more episodes of the Hoopside Podcast with guest appearances from NBA players, coaches, executives, and media members, you can like and subscribe to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. You can also keep up with my tweets on Twitter, at Mike A. Scotto. Make sure you're following Tracy, too. He's at TMac_213. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.